This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. I am Dean Holland, sidekick to that goddess of the garden, that grower of the green,
ooh,
Charlie Dobbin. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm very well, my sidekick. I would like to say, I mean, I don't want to complain, but I haven't seen a cloud since I don't remember. I mean, every day is blue and sunny here. Gorgeous, gorgeous weather. But boy, are my plants hurting for water.
Yeah. And you have a big property to water, do you? I mean,
well, I don't even try to water the whole property, but no. Just the trees and the vegetables. And yeah, today's watering day for sure. But of course, I'm limited. My well only has so much water in it. So yes, it's an interesting dance here between gardening and well watching.
Gotcha. I have my sprinkler on one section right now as we speak, actually. Yeah, just doing a little bit of watering this morning. Because you're right, it's been, we've had some rain up here in the Collingwood area.
Yes,
but
we have,
and it was a lot, but now it's been a few days again, and it's looking dry again.
It's a few weeks here, not a few days.
Oh, my goodness.
Since June 21st, we've had one significant rainfall. So almost 2 months, one significant, meaning 3 centimeters. Like, or maybe it was more than that. It was, I think it was about 3 or 5 centimeters, whatever it was. It was a good chunk of water, but that's it in 2 months.
Is there anything that you can do to help? Is there other
rain
than water?
Dance.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Dancing. Oh, you know what? That's a great question. I would love to answer that question in terms of suggestions for water saving, but let's get those numbers out so
we can
get some callers to ask and get involved in the show. But you're absolutely correct. It's a perfect time to talk about great gardens with less water.
Okay, so the number in Toronto to call if you're in Toronto is 416-360-0740 or toll-free anywhere in the province of Ontario. That is 1-866-740-4740. And, of course, we'd love for you to let Carlos know if you are a first-time caller because then I will give you your garden wings.
Yay!
And we want you to call often. We want you to call early. And I can see some callers on the line already. My goodness. And please, 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 one question per call. Okay.
Good point. I love that mantra. Just a quick, before we head off to a break, I just want to, you know, give a big thank you to, obviously, the Zoomer Media, but also we had some winners in the Healing Gardens contest. I don't know if you know, but the doc series that I'm hosting, called Healing Gardens, has been was airing on Vision TV, all 10 episodes. Once those 10 episodes had aired, the opportunity to win a trip anywhere that the garden route via train will take you was won by Michael and Dagmar, a couple who live in Belleville. So we had some fun meeting in one of the beautiful parks here in Belleville, and they got their big plaque, and they're off, I think they're off right now to Quebec City enjoying some of the gardens out there. So congratulations to them.
And, beautiful.
Yeah, fun. It was a fun thing. And it was just to remind everybody, Healing Gardens can be watched on the web. Go to Vision TV, Healing Gardens, and all 10 episodes are there on your computer.
Okay. And with that, we have to go to our first break. But when we return, we'll have much more right here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And yes, indeed, there is lots going on in the garden right now, which is why we are here. I'm Dean here with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, let's get to our first caller. We're going to a place called Albanston, which not sure exactly where that is, but we've got Diane on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Diane.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Albanston is in the middle of Sarnia, London, and Chatham, basically in the middle of nowhere,
lovely,
or the middle of everywhere.
Lovely. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I want to know how and when to trim back honeysuckle.
Good question. Is it a vine or a shrub?
Vine.
Okay, honeysuckle vine. Generally, with vines, the trimming is based on removing dead wood. So anything that's dead can come out anytime. And you're training your honeysuckle to grow on something, a trellis, an arbor, whatever. So generally, you don't have to do a lot of trimming unless you're finding that it's a bit scraggly and thin and, you know, you want it thicker and more dense. Then trimming the tips when it's finished, when there's no flowers, obviously, on it, would be a great time to encourage bushiness. So that would usually be back in sort of late June, early July. For now, I probably wouldn't. I mean, you could. I wouldn't do a lot of trimming right now. If you really want to do trimming at this time of year, I'd wait till more mid-September, and then it's ready to go next spring.
I want to do quite a bit on one of them, because instead of having it climbing up my trellis, I want it to now run across the ground.
Oh, as a ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
That can be tricky. When you want it to stay flat, it might just want to go up.
Well, I have two, and one is going beautifully flat across the ground.
Okay.
And the other one I did train to go up the trellis, and now I'm going, I like it going across the ground, across rock.
All right, so what I would do then, though, like I say, it's only the middle of August, and you're in a really warm part of the province. So you could, you're going to take it down off the trellis. You're going to, tell it to lay down. So some of them are going to spring back up. So the ones, the canes or branches that insist on going vertical, cut those back. You may even have to cut them right back to the main stem and recognize that this is going to be a bit of a process, and you're going to really concentrate on it next spring and summer rather than this year, just because it's a bit late in the season to do a lot of real training with something like that.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So there isn't anything as specific as to how far I can cut it back at, like a third or...
You know what? Honeysuckle is a pretty vigorous plant. Generally, you're right. A third is, we never take off more than a third. But remember, you can always take off anything that's dead, diseased, or damaged at any time of year, and that doesn't count. And then the rest of it, you're right. I wouldn't take 80% of it off now, particularly now, because the issue now is it's the middle of August. When we do a lot of pruning, plants will respond because it's very invigorating to prune. So they're going to shoot out a whole bunch of new growth in the next couple of weeks, assuming it's warm and moisture is available. And that will be very soft, new, tender growth that could get killed off in the frost. But you're way down south there, so you're not going to have frost till probably Christmas. So you're good. I mean, if I were you, I wouldn't hesitate. If you want to take off as much as a third, even a half, don't worry about it.
And I could do
Thanks
that.
For the question there, Diane.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it a lot. Okay, Albanston, now we go to Mississauga, and we have Teresa. Teresa, welcome to the Garden Show. What do you got for Charlie?
Hi, good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean.
Morning.
I have a beautiful, beautiful 35, 40-year-old magnolia tree, and we noticed in the last couple weeks, the leaves are going, it's like a black and gray, and then the leaf turns yellow, and all these black and gray spots all over. Help! I want to see.
Okay, don't worry. What that is?
What?
It's probably sticky too. If you ever like stood below this tree, and is it sticky on the ground? Is it a patio below?
No, it's on the grass.
Oh, it's on the grass, so you're not able to tell. Okay, so if you look closely at the plant, the magnolia have a very smooth gray bark, but obviously big green leaves. Magnolias are very susceptible to an insect called scale. So S-C-A-L-E.
Okay.
It looks like a little puffs of waxy stuff on the bark of the tree. Usually you'll notice it more towards the tips and on the branches, but if it's a very bad infestation, that infestation will go right back to the main trunk and down the plant. It will weaken and it will eventually kill the tree. So if you see scale, then you need to look after that scale. And the funny thing about scale insects is that they are every They're very specific. So the insect scale for magnolia only goes on magnolia. There's a scale for euonymus. There's scale for different plants. Very, very specific. I'm just trying to double check here because it's all about timing. Uh-huh. You can, to annihilate the scale. When it's a mature insect and it's got that fuzzy, waxy stuff on, all the sprays in the world will not penetrate and will not kill the insect. A sharp blast of water is usually a good place to start. Try knocking off the scale with water. But you can spray an insecticide, and it's just a question of when. And I'm sorry, but I'm just double checking because it's like I say, it's the when is very, very different. Mm-hmm. Toronto, okay, so this is the right time. Late August and September is the time when scale eggs will hatch. When they hatch, the little baby scale insects don't have the cover. They don't have that waxy, fuzzy covering, nor do they have an oyster shell kind of a covering. So they're crawling around. They're very susceptible to insecticides. So horticultural oil, part of a dormant spray kit, can be very effective. If you go to your local garden center, ask for horticultural oil or a dormant spray kit, which is two different bottles. One is the oil, one is the lime sulfur. Follow the instructions on when and what, like when to spray and how much to dilute the oil to spray the magnolia.
Okay,
and so like I say, late August, September, you should be quite effective.
And horticultural oil.
Horticultural, yes.
Okay.
It's just a light mineral oil.
And I spray that in late August, early September?
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much for that question, Teresa, and we wish you luck on your magnolia. Love those magnolias.
Yeah, beautiful trees. Mine's been blooming, actually. Poor little confused tree. It's got, must have 10 blooms on it right now, and it was supposed to save those for next spring.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, got to take a quick break, another one, but we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we are back with much more on The Garden Show. Going to give those numbers out again. If you're in Toronto, please use this number, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario. It's a toll-free call, 1-866-740-4740. And we are now going to go to Etobicoke. We have Sandra on the line. Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show, Sandra.
Hello.
You there, Sandra?
Yes.
Yeah, hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Charlie Dean. I don't have a question. I actually have a tip on your water saving.
Ah.
Our air conditioner, instead of it just being pumped down an internal drain, is pumped outside and we collect the water. And it's a huge amount of water. I can collect 5 liters easily a day.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I do the same thing with my dehumidifier.
Okay.
Take all the water that my dehumidifier collects into pails and take it out to the garden. So, yeah, you're right. There's some great ways that water is part of our world and can be used on the garden pail by pail. So thanks for that.
It has a small pump inside and it's just pumped outside. And then I have a tug that I put it in.
Okay.
And
good stuff.
Rain barrels, I suggest those for everybody because I have close to 20 planters. I never use tap water, and it also waters my vegetable garden. I know we don't have a lot of rain, but it's surprising how much you can collect.
That's true, and rainwater's the best. It's the cleanest, clearest, freshest. Plants love rainwater.
Yeah, I just have two of them, and it's only my lawn that I use tap water for.
Mm. Good stuff. Thanks,
okay,
Sandra.
No, yeah, thanks, Sandra. We appreciate that a ton.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have one rain barrel, and there's no question I could probably use a massive cistern to save some of that spring rainfall, because that's what happens, right? We get rain, fall, and it appears we get rain spring and fall, but not a lot in the summer. So, yes, you can only save so much in one rain barrel. I need like 20.
I have one as well. I hadn't thought of the dehumidifier water, which I'm dumping copious amounts of it down the drain these days.
You know, it's another cool thing. My neighbors have started doing it. When you get in the shower, take a couple of pails with you into the shower so that the overspray goes into the pails. Or even when you turn on the shower and it's a bit cold before you get in, grab that water. So it's all just kind of, you know, wherever we can grab water and not let it go down the drain is a good thing.
Wow. Good tips. Okay, I have a first-time caller on the line. We are going to Karen, who is calling from Niagara. Welcome to the Garden Show, Karen.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to give you your garden wings.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Oh, okay, Charlie. I have a problem with my garden tomatoes. I have lush green plants, vines, and plenty of fruit, but probably 90% of the tomatoes get black on the bottom, and they eventually consume the whole tomato. We're very dry here as well, and I'm wondering if that could play a part. I also have the tomato worm, but we just take them off. Is there any remedy without spraying?
No, there is no spray for what you're experiencing with the black ends on your tomatoes. It's actually called blossom end rot, and it's connected to calcium and the movement of calcium inside the plants. Are your tomatoes in pots or in the ground?
In the ground.
In the ground. Is your soil very well drained? Is it like a very sort of a sandy, granular soil?
Yes, I would say so.
Right. So what you have to do in the future, you can't undo where you've got that rot happening, though you're right, those tomatoes tend to be composted rather than eaten, though they don't taste that bad if you can get them off before they're completely black and just take the good part. But it all comes back to water. So I know I recognize what you're saying about being dry and it's tough to keep the water, but it's consistent water. Tomatoes particularly, and peppers and eggplants, they're all the same family. They need consistent water. So it doesn't mean like pouring the water on and then waiting a week. It's more like every 2 or 3 days, making sure they're getting the equivalent of roughly a quarter to a half an inch of water, whether it's with the sprinkler or with your hose or with watering cans, each plant. And we're going to talk more about amendments to your soil on ways to try and maintain the moisture in your soil so that when it's like this, so hot, so dry, that the moisture is retained a little longer. Do you mulch? Do you have mulch around your tomatoes?
No, not in the garden, no.
Yeah, so you may find that just bark mulch, I usually put that in my walkways where I'm walking, and then I'll put it around plants like tomatoes, just to, not touching the plant, of course, but just trying to, again, maintain the moisture for as long as possible. It does tend to evaporate out of the soil when the sun beats down.
Okay.
So consistent moisture for the future tomato crops, and make sure that you are using some fertilizer. There are fertilizers for tomatoes, and they'll say right on them, you know, with calcium or whatever about calcium. So making sure there is adequate calcium in the soil is important, but you have to have the water there in order for the calcium to be available to the tomatoes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, and I'm sorry that you're having that problem. And the tomato hornworms are so ugly. Pick and squish, pick and squish.
Yeah, how romantic. How romantic. Thanks for that,
Karen. They are so ugly. I don't know if you've ever seen one, Dean, but I even had my neighbor bring a jar over. She was like freaking out. What are these things?
From another planet. Yeah.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. We do have some lines open and some callers waiting, but I'm going to give those numbers out again. 416-360-0740. Don't be shy. You know, we'd love to get your questions. 1-866-740-4740 is the toll-free number for anywhere else in the province. Now, you mentioned amending soil, and we were chatting earlier about a new kind of a bag of, it's a product, very interesting to me.
I know, I sent you a photo. Okay, yeah. So this is a really fun story, and it actually turned out to be a really fun event as well. One of our listeners, her name is Kelly, who lives in Mississauga, but is very good friends of some sheep farmers on an island called Amherst Island in the Thousand Island chain off of Kingston. She listens to the show. She contacted me and said, you know, my friends at Topsy Farms are making this fertilizer that's based on the, when you shear the lambs or any lambs in the late spring, early summer, when they're all sheared, the only keeper wool is the backs and the legs, right? The belly and the bum wool is not used for making sweaters because it's all completely inundated with urine and sheep poop. So what the Topsy Farms people are doing is they're taking that what's called belly grade wool and then doing some composting of it, doing some grinding of it, bagging it up into 2-kilogram bags, and it's called wool pellet fertilizer. So there I am with this bag of wool chunks, and the idea is that you incorporate the wool into the soil as you're planting. So you're adding this wool, which will hold moisture in your soil as the sun beats down and no rain falls. So you've got that wool as a moisture holding component, but you also have the wool slowly decomposing. And as it decomposes, it gives off both potash and nitrogen, both of which are, you know, essential nutrients for plant growth. So I was pretty excited. I went, wow, I think this is cool stuff. And then I discovered Amherst Island isn't that far from where I live. So Elliot and I went for a field trip to the farm, and we met Kelly there and Lindsay and a number of the people who live and work at Topsy Farms. And it was so much fun. Like, this is, like, imagine in 1972, a boatload of draft dodgers, like rowing, I think, from the United States across Lake Ontario, rolling in, you know, rowing up to this island, showing up and starting a commune to raise sheep eventually. And here we are 50 years later, multi-generations later, Topsy Farms is still run by the same people who started it 50 years ago. And it's very, very hippie based, but it's a beautiful place. It's so well designed for, they've got the monarch butterfly way station. They've got all kinds of interesting animals, beautiful trees, walking paths, lots of great wool products, you know, blankets, etc. But the fertilizer was what really grabbed me. And when we went, Elliot and I went for our field trip, we actually participated in a sheep drive where you're driving the sheep from one field to another field. And our participation was to be part of the human fence to keep the sheep from deeking away from following the leader. And that was so much fun. Like, we're such city kids in so many ways. It was really good. Really fun.
Sounds really neat. And that sounds like a really innovative product.
Yeah. And I, you know what? My daughter does all her gardening in containers on a balcony in downtown Toronto. And this is going to be an absolute boost for her because containers always dry out faster than the ground. So I'll probably end up sharing some of this with her. Or maybe if I can get another bag, I'll get her own bag for next spring.
Yeah. And theoretically, it should keep your plants warm during the winter, too, with all that wool.
Oh, good point. So it's called Sally's Garden Wool Pellet Fertilizer. It shows it's available on Etsy. I don't know if that's true or not, but it should be available coming soon to a garden center near you.
Okie dokie. Okay, let's go to Ajax. We have another first-time caller. Ella, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Ella.
Good morning.
I'm going to give you your garden wings, Ella. Okay, hold on.
Okay.
There you go.
Well earned.
Thank you. I have a silly question. We have tiny, tiny little black flies buzzing around the house, and I don't know what they are or how to get rid of them. I'm wondering if they come from any plants I have in the house.
Do you have quite a lot of house plants?
Yes, I do.
Do you have any fruit inside the house, like apples, bananas, that sort of thing on the counter?
Not usually, no.
Okay, so it's probably, okay, because there's two things that can happen. We start seeing fruit flies inside our house in the next month or so as we bring in the harvest. But you're right, probably what you have is something called fungus gnats. So fungus, G-N-A-T-S. Gnats. And they do live in the soil of your houseplants. If you are the kind of person who likes to keep the soil moist all the time, you will have fungus growing in the soil. And these little gnats absolutely love to live in your soil and eat that fungus. So what you need to do, if you want to, and you'll know for sure, go to any of the plants where you feel those gnats might be living. With the palm of your hand, bang the side of the pot. If a whole cloud of tiny little, what look like fruit flies, come out of the pot, then you'll know it's fungus gnats. Oh. And there's two things I recommend. One is pull back on your watering. Start watering less frequently. Do water thoroughly, but don't water as often. So the soil will dry down between waterings. You'll have less fungus, fewer insects. And then get a hold of something that's called sticky sticks. So sticky, like flypaper, S-T-I-X, sticks, little yellow sticky cards that you will put on little sticks that will go into your pots of your different plants. And the fungus gnats, as they're flying around, are very attracted to the yellow and will get stuck, and they die on the yellow sticky sticks, which means they will not lay more eggs. The whole process can take up to a month, but you should be able to eliminate all of them.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the question, Ella. And I don't think that was a silly question at all.
Me neither. Yeah,
it was a good question.
And tell me, it's not that unusual of a question. It definitely happens to people that have their lots of houseplants, and they're very good parents to their houseplants and keep them moist, too moist, actually, and end up with the gnats.
I think we should come up with a more romantic name, though, than fungus gnats.
Fruit fly lookalikes.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, we got a caller from Stouffville on the line. We are going to talk to Nancy now. Welcome to the Garden Show, Nancy.
Thank you. I want to plant cedars along a fence line. My neighbor keeps piling snow onto my property, and so I thought a nice way of blocking it would be cedars. And the thing is, it's in an area that I can't get water easily to. What time of year do you recommend that I put in these cedars that nature can take care of it? I was thinking of 6-foot swamp cedars, 1 foot on center.
Okay, good point. Is the fence a chain link fence or a wooden fence?
No, it's a post fence with wire that needs replacing, but he's been knocking it over with the snow. So,
I'm trying to be nice about this. To do this most affordably, what's your distance you're trying to plant?
Probably 120 feet.
Oh, wow, that is big. All right, so first of all, I wouldn't do 1 foot on center.
Minimum would be 40 feet. That would take care of where he dumps the snow.
Okay. So number one, 3 foot on center, so 18 inch each plant. I go at least 18 inch on center. You could even go rather than 1 foot.
Okay, 18 inches on center, yes, okay.
Because you want these plants to be able to grow. Like, you don't want them just banging into each other. And they're going to also compete for this limited water you referred to. I would amend the soil before you plant. Get all kinds of organic matter, whether it's bags and bags of organic composted manure or your own homemade compost or, you know, out to one of your local horse barns. There's lots of farms around the Stouffville area. And get organic matter into the soil, and that will help hold moisture. So get that done. To do this most affordably, buy what's called bare root cedars in the spring. In your area, I'm sure there's somebody selling bare root. So swamp cedars, they're literally pulled up out of the swamp. They knock all the soil off, and you only buy them and plant them early in the spring. And they're very, very affordable to buy, but the day you get them is the day you plant them. So you've got your trench ready to go. You've got all your soil amendments. Everything's ready to go. And, yeah, I mean, there's Angelo's Garden Center in the Richmond Hill area definitely sells and delivers bare root cedars. Swamp cedar, good idea because they're native. I probably wouldn't go as much as 6 footers. I'd probably start with 3 to 4 footers because the younger plants will get established more quickly than the taller ones. And be prepared to water. Be prepared to haul a couple of watering cans if you have to.
Okay. He'll just dump the snow on top of it if it's only 3 foot.
Oh, I see.
He's that kind of neighbor.
Wow.
Yeah. What about, I mean, it'd be kind of ugly, but what if you planted 4 foot cedars and then you put an orange snow fence in front of them for the first winter or two? Would that just be too much?
That's an option. That is a really good idea. I like that.
There you go. Not to mention ugly.
Good. sorry, I shouldn't say stuff like that.
No, it's okay. It happens. Yeah.
So you're saying don't plant them in fall.
No. Unless you've got an unlimited budget, the thing is you cannot get bare root at this time of year. So you're going to pay a lot of money for 4 to 6 foot cedars. Do not get emerald cedars. Get, like you said, cedars only come bare root as far as I know. But you can get white or black cedar potted, but you are going to pay quite a bit of money.
Okay, Nancy, I'm sorry, I have to run to a break.
Thanks for your question.
And
thanks
best
for calling.
Of luck with that. Yeah, and you know, I think it's a great idea. Cedars, snow fence, and maybe a bouncer. There we are.
a big dog.
There we are. Okay, we have to take a quick break, but we will be right back with much more right here on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, I'm Dean Holland here with Charlie Dobbin. And the numbers to call, 416-360-0740, that's the Toronto number, or toll-free anywhere else in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We're going to go to Gabrielle on the line. Gabrielle and Richmond Hill, you're calling from. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a problem with beans. The poles, and they're dry. It's about 10 feet, maybe higher. For the 4 feet from the ground, the leaves, they all turn brown, with brown spot, and they fall in it. And they don't have as many beads on. I don't know what is going on. I never see anything like that. Can you tell me what caused that? Some kind of virus, some kind of bugs? I don't see any bugs. I water them almost every day because the why they're so hot. So sure. What you think might be?
Well, are they, what kind of beans are they? They're pole beans, but are they like green, just green string beans or something else?
Just green string beans, yes.
Yeah. So what I think is going on is something that you cannot control, and that is the temperature. As it gets really hot, as it's been, plants stop growing. And some plants are even more susceptible to the heat. It's like the cold, right? Everything slows down in the cold. Everything slows down when it gets really hot. So beans have stopped flowering due to the heat. And when you don't have flowers, you don't have fruit.
Right.
If the plants can stay alive between now and the next month or so, they could start flowering again. And I wouldn't water every day. I'd be careful about watering every day. Water thoroughly every 2 or 3 days and keep an eye. Good garden hygiene. If leaves are falling, then certainly remove those. Get a little rake out and rake those out. There are some fungal diseases, as the humidity has been quite high as well, that can affect beans. But I would blame it more on the temperature, that it's just a heat thing.
Well, I have a 2 row. The one is faced more to the sun. Half the row, it turned out the way I described. The other one, they just grow normally, green, beautiful leaves. It kind of puzzled me. I never seen anything like this before. That's why.
Right. So the one that's in a little bit less sun, a little bit shaded, is greener than the one that's in full sun. And again, that goes back to temperature. The sun is beating down.
But there was nothing else I can do. Just not water every day. Like I water yesterday morning. I did not water today. Yeah. So maybe should I water them tomorrow? But well, the leaves, it looks like they are wilty. They require some water.
Okay. So it's hard to diagnose over the radio. What I would do is get out a trowel, a little tool of some kind. You watered yesterday. So today at some point, go out and dig down with your trowel and check the soil moisture. It might be that it looks really dry on the surface and there's lots of moisture down 2 inches. Or it might be that your soil is so well drained that it's dry down 6 inches. If that's the case, you're right. You're going to have to water every second day. But for sure, it's not a problem for the plant to dry out slightly every couple of days. Main thing is you don't want to keep them soggy or too wet. And you never know. The surface can look like concrete or really, really dry, but down an inch, there's lots of moisture. And again, it goes back to mulch. Consider a bark mulch, an organic layer on the surface of the soil around your beans, and that will help keep in moisture as well.
Okay, thanks for the call. Thanks for the question, Gabriel, and all the best with that. And some things are hard to diagnose, of course, over the phone. I know some people send you pictures, and you can do that. Charlie's email is c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. So that's always an option if you want to send a picture for Charlie to look at as well. Let's go to Maureen in North York. She's been on the line for a little while. Welcome to the Garden Show, Maureen.
Yeah, good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean. I'm actually calling with an appeal to bees and butterflies. You know, we wouldn't have gardens without bees, and so they need water. But the important thing, especially for butterflies, is they cannot get their wings wet. So if you've got a bird bath or water out for birds, put a stone that's above the water level for the bees and the butterflies to land on so they can get a drink. Because especially like you, Charlie, here in North York, the rain ain't been in the picture for a long time.
Really?
So, you know, they need water too.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's like you said, birds, bees, butterflies. I even have garter snakes coming and drinking out of my watering cans. So, yes, all the little critters out there need water. And butterflies, you're right, they're very susceptible to the wind blowing them into bodies of water. So even just a rock with a shallow indentation in it, even some rotting fruit is a very effective way to get liquid into the bees and the butterflies. Not too near your house, obviously, just out a little bit. But butterflies don't like the wind when they're getting a drink, and they definitely do need water.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for that, Maureen. Yeah,
good tip. Thank you.
Appreciate that a lot. Great. Okay. We have to go to our last break, and so we'll do that right now. But we will be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're back with more on The Garden Show. The lines are open, 416-360-0740. Still time to get your question in. 1-866-740-4740 is the toll-free number. Charlie, I had a quick, it's a sort of an additional question about the honeysuckle. So I have two honeysuckles that grow up a trellis very happily. But over the years, my kids with their various balls and hockey pucks have destroyed the trellis. So I wish to replace it. Now, of course, my honeysuckle is growing up about, 8 feet. And I don't know the best way to go about that. Do I have to just, cut the whole thing off and start again? Or what should I do?
The way honeysuckle grows is the older growth is going to be quite woody and rigid. So that's going to be hard to retwine into a new trellis. But what I think I would do is I would try and carefully, by hand, untangle the existing honeysuckle from the existing trellis and bring the honeysuckle forward off the house, assuming the trellis is on the house.
Yep.
And so it's going to flop forward down onto the walkway or driveway or whatever. And be ready with your, once that's all down, as breakage will happen as you're doing this, have pruners ready. So you kind of have to you're going to have to do some cutting, some untwining, untangling, and just sort of bring it down as carefully as you can. At the end of the day, you are going to end up pruning some of it away. There's no question. Take away the old trellis. Get the new trellis installed. Remember, we don't put it flat on the house. It's got to be off the house by an inch or so.
Yeah, I've got it off by about 2 inches, I think.
So. Yeah, perfect. And then once that's installed, then, of course, now it's the process. Get all hands on deck, and everybody can take an hour or so of individually retwining the honeysuckle back into the new trellis. Again, there will be some breakage, some bends that won't actually survive. So just be prepared to do a little bit of pruning. And then when you stand back and go, boy, that's a bit of a scraggly mess, don't hesitate to hold. If it's 8 feet tall, don't hesitate to bring the whole thing down to about 5 feet tall before you even start. Just take a straight line across the top and only work with 5 feet instead of 8. And next spring, it'll take off for you.
And am I okay to do that now, between now and September? Or
yeah, you could, for sure, as a garden chore and a family event. Why not? Yeah.
The boys who broke my trellis, they will be the ones retwining it in. So, Oh, yeah. Okay. We have you got an email from Dave in a very apropos place for the garden show, Bloomfield, New York. And he says, you know, have you heard of the old farmer's tale? The thicker the onion skins, the harder the winter will be. Don't know about the rest of the world, but here in upstate New York, my onion and garlic skins are very, very tough. He says, God help us if the tale is true.
It's so funny. Yeah, there's always that forecasting, right? So, of course, the old farmer's almanac is amazing at winter forecasts. And there's some really, really cute little rhymes out there. You know, for example, squirrels gathering nuts in a flurry will cause snow to gather in a hurry. So watch your squirrels, see how high the hornets nest, 'twill tell how high the snow will rest, on and on and on. Lots of cute little, then there's the onion skin very thin, mild winter coming in, onion skin thick and tough, coming winter cold and rough.
Gotcha.
So that is definitely been around, that saying of thick onion skins, thick garlic skins, look out, cold winter, rough winter coming. Other signs of a bad winter, even thicker than normal corn husks will indicate a harsh winter. Tough apple skins, thick hair on a cow's neck, if you want to go check out a cow's neck, larger spider webs, plentiful berries and nuts, which might be why the squirrels are so busy. So, and there is some science behind all this, the La Niñas and the what happens with water currents and wind currents. So there is some science, but there is a lot of anecdotal information. So, Dave, I'm afraid you might be on to something. This might be a chilly winter coming. So let's all keep that in mind and get some good books to read and chop some firewood and get some wool blankets from Topsy Farms and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, some those plants are pretty darn intuitive. My goodness, they just seem to know.
Well, plants and insects. The insects and the birds and the bees, they're all telling us stuff if we pay attention.
Mm-hmm. I got another email from Aldina. She has a pink clematis that's not looking good, and she'd appreciate advice on how to strengthen it. She bought it last year in the summer, but didn't put it in the ground till the fall. It grew a bit, but the leaves mostly yellowed and didn't flower. It has only one thin stalk and two short ones. It's getting lots of sun, and it's watered regularly.
Okay, so this is a great question, Aldina. I've run into this so many times where people fall in love with a clematis, plant it, and then they think it's not the right place. So they move it, and then it doesn't do well. So they move it, and every year they move it, and every year it doesn't do well. The trick with clematis is leave it alone. Let it get established. Don't worry about flowers. Don't worry about leaves. I mean, you do want a few green leaves, but make sure you're not overwatering it. Lots of sun is good, but remember, the roots should have some shade. The top or the stems, branches of the clematis need to grow into the sun. So we always talk about, you know, feet in the shade, head in the sun when it comes to clematis. But be happy with where it is. Don't panic. Keep an eye on it. Do water regularly, but don't overwater, and check if you're not sure. Get something that there's a little bit of shade around the base, and in the spring, cut that plant down, regardless of how many stalks there are and how tall it is. Cut it down to 4 inches tall next spring, round about March or April, or May and expect it to be a little bigger, maybe not a lot of flowers. It takes at least 3 to 4 years for clematis to really look good.
Okay. And in our last minute, do you have any, you said some, maybe some water conservation suggestions you might have off the top of your head. I know we talked about rain barrels. We talked about, the shower water.
Mulch is a great one. Collecting leaves in the fall, deciduous tree leaves as they drop from the trees, keep them on the property, chop them all up with your lawnmower, put them on the surface of the soil, create leaf mulch. So yeah, there's a few things, and we can talk more, but I think this wool pellet is an interesting amendment. I'll certainly be reporting back more about that one.
Yeah. Is there any merit to putting grass clippings on the garden? Does that help?
Yeah, there can be. Just be careful you don't put them on too thick.
Gotcha.
Best to dry them first.
Okay.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you,
Carlos. Thanks to all our great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.